My guest at this time is Eric Tietzel. He's the executive director of the Manhattan Declaration, which is a national movement of Christians for life, marriage, and religious freedom. It was founded by Chuck Colson. Eric and his colleagues were among the hundreds of thousands on the National Mall on Wednesday, taking part in the annual March for Life, noting 41 years since the Roe versus Wade decision from the Supreme Court, and by most reliable estimates, more than 55 million unborn Americans terminated before they saw their first breath. And Eric, thanks so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, obviously, this is a major event each year. I don't know if you have a sense of exactly the size of the crowd today in this march, but talk about your participation in it, why you do it, and what you sensed as you were part of it today.
Yeah, you're exactly right. This really is one of the neatest events that I've ever been a part of or seen. They say that hundreds of thousands, upwards of 600,000 people participate any given year, which makes it just a phenomenal experience. There are a lot of marches in Washington, D.C. Almost any given weekend, you'll find a group of people advocating and lobbying for whatever issue, but nothing like this, and certainly not every single year for 41 years. It's truly a testament to the courage and the conviction of the church. This is a faith-based movement of people who believe that every life has inherent value as a being created in the image of God, and that we should do whatever we can to stand up for them. So to the extent that the March for Life reminds the country and people in Washington certainly of that truth, it's a worthwhile venture.
Eric, obviously one of the big subplots with today's march was much colder than usual temperatures here in Washington and right on the heels of a snowstorm. And as most people know, the folks normally around Washington don't handle bad weather very well. So did it sour the rally in any way, or did it invigorate you all out there?
Yeah, not at all. It's really something. I have been in D.C. about 5 years, and without fail, the March for Life weekend is the coldest day of the winter. I mean, really, it's so true. It's one of those things that makes you wonder if the Lord isn't using the weather to accomplish some purpose of His. Maybe it's to show the people who aren't participating in the march just how deeply those who are care about this issue, that they would come out, stand in the cold for hours, out of their conviction. It's really phenomenal.
There had been a counter rally on the pro-choice side planned for the Supreme Court that ended up getting canceled on Wednesday. So the Hardy Souls.
Oh, there you go. There it is.
The Hardy Souls exactly Award, right, for sure. One of the things we heard from March organizers, in addition to the massive turnout that happens year after year, is that she is particularly encouraged by the increase in the number of young people, both high school, college, and young professionals. What did you notice in terms of the makeup of the crowd today?
It's really startling. I mean, there are so many high school and college groups who bus in from all over the country. We saw signs from Kansas and Nebraska, Florida, Ohio. I talked to a young priest from New Orleans who had never been to D.C. before. Again, these young people believe in this stuff, and it's an adventure, and they're willing to kind of go out and have an adventure and stand up for something that they believe in. And year after year, you see more of them. I think it's really true to say that this is the most pro-life generation. I think the data bear that out, and it manifests itself in many different ways, not only with the abortion issue, but this is a generation of people who care deeply about the poor. They think deeply about all kinds of other issues that touch on the dignity of every human life, both born and unborn. But abortion is certainly the top of that list. It's the greatest injustice currently occurring in the world. And so they show up to represent their beliefs about it.
Eric, this may be more conventional wisdom than actual fact, but the conventional wisdom is that people of the younger generation are generally more liberal on the social issues. The turnout and the numbers in some polling on the abortion issue seem to suggest otherwise, and when asked for explanations, some people point to the fact that they're part of a generation where their parents could have legally aborted them. Some say it's the advances in technology. They can see the 3D sonograms of unborn children, and that's a major influence. What do they tell you is the main reason they're so fired up about this?
I think you hit the nail on the head on a couple of those. In general, I think young people just simply believe that an unborn child is a life. And as a life, it's worthy of protection. I think it's as simple as that. Unfortunately, the fact that an unborn child is a life is not going to be enough for everyone. On the other side of this debate, there are those who believe that regardless, or they believe that abortion should be legal, kind of a moral monster who would say such a thing. Nevertheless, it's true. And there are those who are simply going to refuse to admit what science and common sense clearly show. But we're winning, and it's truly an encouraging thing. You know, 41 years ago when this case came down, the members of the Supreme Court believed that they were putting sort of the final nail in what was a movement that had been moving right along, and that this was the apex and it would never change. They had no way of knowing that within just a couple of generations, the country would have shifted direction so drastically. And now it looks like it's only a matter of time before we are a nation that no longer commits this great injustice.
Let's talk about that just briefly before we get to a couple other points. Number one, New Jersey Congressman Chris Smith, I think, was one of the ones, at least, who said today that he believes that some of the folks there, and he's obviously talking about the younger folks probably, will see the end of abortion in their lifetime. So how do you envision that unfolding?
I certainly share his optimism, but it's not a guarantee. It's going to take the continued hard work of people all around the country working together to make that a reality. Some of the greatest achievements have occurred at the state level, state and local level, with regulations and statutes on many different aspects of the abortion question, whether it's parental notification laws or health requirements related to abortion clinics and that sort of thing. On the other side, creating adoption laws and other policies that are pro-family and pro-life help to encourage women in crisis to make the right decision. The work of crisis pregnancy centers has been amazing in helping women in need and their unborn child. And we need to continue to do those things. There are advancements in technology that are going to make abortion more easily accessible to the point where you may not even need to see a doctor before a certain point in your pregnancy. Abortion by pill is one of the advancements that we're going to need to overcome as we continue to combat abortion clinics and some of those regulations. It could be that on the other side, we need to figure out what to do with advances in medical technology that don't require a woman to see a doctor in order to do these kinds of things. So there's a long road ahead, but politics is downstream from culture. And as my generation and other generations come into power, and the polling shows that Americans no longer want to live in a nation that puts to death unborn children, I think that our laws will follow.
And you mentioned adoption. That was a major theme of the rally again this year. Last topic before we let you go. Obviously, there are those on the other side of the issue. Here was some of President Obama's statement on the 41st anniversary of Roe v. Wade. He says, today we recommit ourselves to the decision's guiding principle that every woman should be able to make her own choices about her body and her health. We reaffirm our steadfast commitment to protecting a woman's access to safe, affordable health care and her constitutional right to privacy, including the right to reproductive freedom. And we resolve to reduce the number of unintended pregnancies, support maternal and child health, and continue to build safe and healthy communities for all of our children, because this is a country where everyone deserves the same freedom and opportunities to fulfill their dreams. How would you respond to that statement?
So many inconsistencies inherent in that statement, aren't there? This is the most pro-abortion, anti-family president that we've ever had, and yet he's willing to go so far to talk about his desire to help women and children. It's ironic. I have to believe that this is a man who understands how inconsistent his logic is but has to say these things for political necessity. His party is one that is founded first and foremost on abortion rights, and you can't deviate from that principle and get anywhere in the Democratic Party. So he claims to be a man of faith, claims to be a family man. I hope that one day we will see his espoused values and his political commitments come into line and be consistent. But today is obviously not that day.
Eric, we'll let you warm up now. Thanks so much for your time today, and thank you again for being with us.
Thanks very much. Thank you for your work.
Eric Tietzel is the executive director of the Manhattan Declaration, a national movement of Christians for life, marriage, and religious freedom, founded by Chuck Colson. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.